Want a recipe for success? Step one, visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. Step two, click on my link to browse OCD Training School's amazing course catalog. Step three, enroll. And step four, enjoy learning. With no added cost to you, you can support the OCD family community while grabbing some continuing education or learning how to bridge yourself to self-help strategies for OCD. Again, that's OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. And use my special link to sign up today. Hi, fam. Did you miss me? Some of y'all are like, what are you talking about? I just listened to last week's water cooler chat. And while you're not wrong, this week kicks off our season 3 premiere with lived experience warrior Danny Grimwood. So nestle in, fam, because Danny's inspiring story is bringing more hope and challenging stigma. And we are here for it. I'm Nicole Morris, licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health correspondent. And let me be the first to say, welcome to the family. The OCD family, that is. I am here to create a community of support for family members, spouses, partners, parents, adult children, as there may be adult words, and chosen family of OCD sufferers and their community. I've had over 22 years of experience in the mental health field, but please note that this information does not qualify or substitute as a diagnostic evaluation, therapy, or treatment, and it is presented on an as-is basis. Please follow up with a qualified mental health provider in your area regarding concerns for yourself or loved ones. Thank you for joining us today. Now, let's get started. Alrighty, it feels great to be back to our full-length content where we get to chat with amazing guests and learn more about support, resources, and the hope available to the OCD family community. So welcome to season 3, and if you're new to the pod, I'll just share a bit more about myself. I'm Nicole, as the intro said, and I'm a wife and mother first. I'm a daughter, a sister, a friend, and in all of these relationships, I also have loved ones with OCD. But also, bonus points, I'm also a lived experience warrior who happens to treat OCD, host and own a show about OCD. I mean, I know what you're thinking. She sounds like good times. But I really do have the passion for this community. And honestly, OCD and OC-related disorder, or OCRD warriors, are some of the most amazing, creative, empathic, and loving people I have ever met. And the fam here is just such an amazing support community. But I learned when I started first working with this specialty, much like in other areas of mental health, OCD really affects, impacts, and thrives within environments and relationships. So the loved ones and chosen family, if you have a beloved warrior in your life, you absolutely know the weight and the effect these debilitating disorders have not only on the warriors, but on your relationships. So my heart for building this community, which I'll shout out a bit later in today's show with Danny, really stems from that foundation. It stems from sitting with a client and wanting to give them a resource and introduce them to a community where they could know they're not alone. And I just couldn't find it. It didn't quite exist. Only I knew that wasn't true. I knew we existed, family. I knew, as I said, in all of my roles, it existed for me. We just needed a gathering space. So I created the OCD Family Podcast, and we have learned now, 3 whole seasons in, how powerful this support and hope can be together. So if you're new here, welcome. We are so glad you are here. And for our return fam, hey, boo. Hi. So great to be with you again. So with season 3, I'm psyched, y'all. We have some really amazing topics with even more amazing guests, and I just keep pinching myself that I get to bring all of these amazing conversations to you. And you'll find our guests vary. Some are lived experience warriors, some are family members, some are researchers, expert practitioners, advocacy leaders, you name it. Sometimes even my kiddos pop into the conversation, which is always really exciting for them. And our goal is simple and transparent, reminding ourselves we're not alone, kicking stigma to the curb and expanding hope together because we're better together. So if that sounds like the kind of family time you could use in your life, please do join us. Like and subscribe, or even share a 5-star review wherever you enjoy your podcasts and YouTube, because together we improve the algorithm and that helps expand our family and spread that message of hope to more people. So today we're talking with Danny Grimwood from across the pond. Danny resides in the UK and has almost a 30-year journey with OCD at this point. He's a husband, and he's a dad. And I'll let Danny share more about his story with the nooks and crannies of how OCD has impacted his life. But I will give this trigger warning. While we don't discuss suicide or unaliving directly, we do mention it being adjacent to the camp of feelings of hopelessness or feeling like one can't carry on. Additionally, we will be referencing a traumatic birth story and a miscarriage as well. So in my sensitivity to how this may be triggering for some of our listeners, I want to provide that informed consent. But if you can, I do invite you to hang with us, fam, and hear Danny's story. Because what we will address, amongst other things, is the importance for support and resources, including breaking down stigma for everyone, but also particularly for men in that conversation, birth, miscarriage. They often aren't a part of these important conversations. So we're going to dive in with Danny, but just a note that any resources that we discuss, or even if you're like, I am loving Danny and his story, and I would love to follow him on X, jump on over to OCDFamilyPodcast.com and check out this episode's blog, because all of those deets and more will be linked and ready for you to check out, fam. Alrighty, without further ado, let's meet Danny. Welcome back to the OCD Family Podcast. And today my guest is Danny Grimwood. Danny, you and I go a couple of years back. We kind of found each other on the Twitter spaces, even when it was like still Twitter. So Danny, thank you for coming on the show.
No problem at all. Glad to be here.
I'm really excited to kick off season three, returning to our roots of really sharing personal stories and how OCD affects not only the warrior in the family, but affects the family system, the relationships around the warrior. And so, Danny, you have OCD and you do some advocacy work. I don't know if you consider it this or not, but I consider it advocacy work on Twitter and have also sat down for an interview before. And so would love to hear, first of all, how did you find out that you were struggling with OCD?
So I guess around 2021, I Googled a lot of my symptoms I had, which probably you shouldn't do, but I Googled it and OCD kept on coming up quite a lot. And the more I searched, the more I thought this is definitely OCD. I didn't really know what to do.
Yeah.
So I carried on Googling and just lived with it. I just carried on my life with OCD. And then finally, I kind of broke down to my wife one night and explained to her everything that was going on with me, because I hid it from her, I hid it from my kids, I hid it from everyone. It was quite hard to keep it a secret from everyone what was going on. So I think I finally got to breaking point and had to speak to someone.
Yeah. So if I am understanding you correctly, you were feeling the pressure cooker that is OCD. You were kind of feeling that buildup, but hadn't really known the name for it yourself, hadn't really talked about it with anybody. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, I just, from a young age, I just, like, done a lot of checking and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really think anything of it until, like, different things started coming into my life, like intrusive thoughts and the organization and the numbers. And then it just all got on top of me, and it led to that I needed to find help for, I don't know what would have happened after that, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, I'm impressed. I know Googling can, for so many of us with lived experience, can be quite a rabbit trail, but I'm impressed because I feel like sometimes we can go into Google. I did this too when I was like, gosh, what's going on here? And I found OCD and I'm a therapist. But at the same point, it's interesting because so many therapists can miss OCD. And I don't know about over where you are, but like I know here in the States, if you haven't really learned about OCD comprehensively, a lot of times it gets missed as just anxiety or depression or some of these other different issues. But you were able to kind of get that insight of like, oh my gosh, I think this is OCD and it does fit with the history of checking, et cetera. So when you think back then to your earlier memories, understanding now the profile of OCD, when do you think it first showed up? Do you think it first showed up in 2021 or was it way before that?
No, through therapy, we sort of like backtracked to where it could have possibly started. And we think it was probably when I was around 11 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like my parents gave me a key to our house. And I remember just then just being very protective of that key, always checking. I'd go out with my friends to play football. I'd always be checking that I've got it. I'd lock the door when I left the house and I'd check that I'd locked the door. And I guess even in like now, not as bad, but I still now I'll lock the door.
Yeah.
And I check. And so I think it comes from around that age, I guess. And it never was a problem then, but through my life, it just seemed normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I say, from about 10, 11 years old, I guess.
Okay. And when you say it started with checking and you had the key and that was really important, what do you think the thought was underlying that? Because it wasn't just about, is the door locked? But the checking is, oh my gosh, is somebody going to break in? Would that have been my fault?
Yeah, that was it. Even from that age, I need to make sure I just check in case someone breaks in. Obviously, that stemmed till when I was older. Not so much now, because I wouldn't call myself fully recovered, but it's worse if I go around checking all the doors and windows, because I thought, if I don't check all these, someone is going to break in or harm my family or do really bad things to them.
Yeah. And when you describe this checking routine, and you kind of alluded to it in just how thorough that checking was, but I know sometimes people listening go, well, it's kind of normal to check, especially depending on where you live in a city. If it's a kind of a busy city, wouldn't I want to make sure that the door is locked? You know, what's wrong with that? And so it's not just about, did I check to see if the door is locked, right? Can you describe, if you had a ritual that you can recall, and I'm sure it's probably grown if it still kind of visits you upon occasion. But what do you mean when you say checking to help people understand how distressing this checking and imperative it felt?
Yeah, so like I could spend easily 15 minutes walking around my house, checking windows, doors. I had to check the gas on our gas hob. And there was a point where I'd like sniff the hob to make sure I couldn't smell any gas, because I'd have these thoughts, awful thoughts of things that could happen to my family. So just to say to someone, I just naturally check the door. Everyone would do that, but not everyone has these awful thoughts that something's going to happen to their family, or you leave the house and the door might be open, and when you get back, someone's going to be there to harm you and or your family. I do think it's hard for people who don't have OCD to understand how like pretty terrifying them thoughts can be.
Yeah,
distress it.
Absolutely. So it's not just I'm checking to make sure somebody doesn't break in. It's like all those worst case scenarios that can play out in your mind and checking them. Sometimes the checking can alleviate it temporarily, but sometimes checking it, you still feel distress, like it could happen, but the cost of not checking it feels so dire, feels so urgent, because the consequences would be so catastrophic, right?
Yeah, like there's things I used to have a problem with, like where I work, we have a gate, which I used to lock, but I still do. I drive home from work and then go back again, because I think, what happens if I haven't locked that gate and someone breaks into the work? It's going to be my fault. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get the blame for that. Right, so I've come home and go back to work again and check it and then go home. And it's still in my mind.
Right.
I'd like wait for like a message off someone at work saying, why the hell didn't you lock the gate? Like someone's broke it.
Right. And they're going to be like, here you are, Danny. You are the one. Right.
Yeah, it's all your fault.
It's all your fault. Right. So OCD is absolutely cruel in this way. And I think that paints a really helpful picture for folks that haven't gone through these intrusive thoughts. Now, as a podcast and as a listening community, we talk a lot about the loved ones, the supports around OCD sufferers, OCD related disorder sufferers. And back then when you were 11, did you have any clue, like, gosh, this is really kind of adding distress to me? I know part of it just felt very normal. And these safety behaviors, which is a word I tend to substitute for compulsions a lot of times, because we come by them honestly, like, of course. If you thought somebody was going to break in and hurt your family, wouldn't you check that? If you thought gas was going to fill the flat or the apartment or the house, wouldn't you check that? And so it starts off honestly, but when you were younger, what was your family's standpoint on mental health? Was there any kind of like read on this, that this was in the mental health category?
No, nothing. I guess like no one knew really apart from myself. I don't know. I guess I thought it was normal.
Yeah.
Just to lock the door and check it and then make me check it again.
Yeah.
Then check you've got the key. I had no idea. Like, looking back now, it's pretty obvious it was OCD. But back then, I had no idea.
Yeah. So fast forward to 2021. And, you know, family, you know what we were dealing with in 2021? It was so a little bit stressful. Times were a little bit tough in 2021. And you started feeling this fever pitch. Did it feel like overnight everything intensified? Or how did this kind of get to the point where you're like, I got to confess all of these stressors that I'm dealing with. But can you tell us a little more about that process?
Yeah, I guess it's like every compulsion was getting worse. The intrusive thoughts were getting worse. It was just slowly like a pot ready to explode. It was just getting worse and worse and worse. And it was like sort of early 22 in the end that I just felt like a lot of people talk about mental health and suicide. I never felt suicidal, but I just felt like I couldn't go on anymore. Like I just didn't, I just wanted to give up. I just didn't want to do anything. So that's when I had to speak to my wife and say, look, I need to get help because this is what's going on with me. And it felt bad because the hardest bit, she didn't know. I guess if someone knows what you're going through, they can help you. But she had no idea. No one did. Like, it's something I kept to myself.
Yeah.
That's pretty ashamed. It's pretty a shameful thing to have. And a lot of people have said that, realized.
Yes. In fact, we're going to be talking about shame, doing an entire episode on the shame surrounding OCD. Because like yourself, and it's not that you are responsible and so you're not dealing with the guilt. No, it's this shame of feeling, again, like these really scary, hard, difficult things could happen. You could be responsible. It's incredibly stressful. And a lot of people do the best that they can to kind of keep it to themselves because they fear the consequences of other people knowing. And so it's absolutely understandable that you were like, I'm trying to shield, feeling like I'm trying to protect my family from what I'm experiencing, from what could potentially happen. But then you sat down with your wife and you were like, okay, we got to talk. So how did she receive that information?
She was great. Like, I knew she would. This is a crazy thing. I knew she'd be fine and she'd be like, yeah, just I'll support you. You speak to the people you need to speak to and I'll be there to support you all the way.
Yeah, that's amazing. Family, if you're wondering, like, how can I show support? How can I react? That's amazing. And I love that you were able to have that positive experience. So what's your wife's name?
Kim.
Kim. Good work, Kim. We give you the double thumbs up and all the gold stars. But yeah, I mean, again, it's so interesting, right? Because you have all this shame and you're like, oh my gosh, she doesn't even know. You tell her and she's like, babe, whatever you need. Whatever you need. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's your wife or if it's your husband or whatever, like, of course they're going to support you. But it's just so hard, like I say about the shame,
right.
That shame of keeping a secret. You know, you tell your children, tell the truth. And
right.
Then there's me lying to my wife about this, like, I think I have OCD.
Well, not to push back on that too much, but what I would say is, were you lying to her or were you, in your mind, were you trying to protect her?
Yeah, just hiding it, I guess, because... it's quite hard to explain to someone. I'm like checking things all the time. I've got a problem with numbers. I need to be organized. If I don't do all this stuff, like someone might break in the house and kill you.
Right.
To tell it to someone, they might think you've gone mad. Like,
right.
What are you saying to me?
Yeah. That is a fear for a lot of people. Like, are people going to think I'm crazy? And sometimes for ourselves, even as lived experience folks, we can know on one hand, like this sounds bizarre. This sounds illogical. My head says it's wrong, but the heart says, shit, if I don't do something, something really bad might happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not as simple as just knowing something, which can be difficult because a lot of times people, when they do find out or they confide in other people, sometimes people will be like, well, just stop thinking that.
Yeah. Kind of is that simple.
There's that idea. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, would love that for me. Yeah, as if it were just that easy. But I love that she was so supportive. And had you guys, in terms of marriage, where were you coming from in terms of mental health? Were you like, yeah, everybody has mental health? Was it kind of like, we don't really talk about that? What was it like for you guys?
Yeah, we sort of both understood about mental health and I always say to Kim about there was one conversation we was having about mental health. We was in the car driving somewhere. And she said to me, we're lucky that neither of us suffer with mental health problems. And I just remember my stomach feeling sick. And I was like, if only I could just be honest with you and tell you what's going on. And I was like, just sort of patted it away.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we're fine. And it's like, yeah, we're very open about it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be open then.
Right.
But we are now.
And you know what's interesting? It's like physical health, whether it's going great or challenging, we all have it. And mental health is the same. Whether it's going great or it's challenging, we all have it. We all have these different aspects of our health. And yeah, there's that stigma, right? If you have mental health issues, if you have a mental health disorder, then you must be crazy. You're kind of in that reserve class of special over here. And the reality is everyone has different struggles that may stick or may be very temporary, but there's different struggles. We are all managing it. If you have a brain, congratulations, you have mental health.
Right? Yeah, I've always thought like if you had a broken leg, you would go and get help. So if your mind's broken, why wouldn't you go and seek help as well? But for some reason, like, people just put it off and, like, I don't know, just think, oh, we'll be okay. We'll be able to struggle through somehow. But you can't. You should just go and see someone.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, we have even proactive kind of routine, like a teeth cleaning twice a year. And we might say to work, you know what? I have my teeth cleaning. I got to go to the dentist this time of year. Or you might have an issue where you're like, not even time for a cleaning, but I'm feeling pain. I'm going to go. And it feels different, whether it's physical or dentistry or whatever, that feels different than going, hi, yeah, so I'm really struggling and with these different really intrusive thoughts or different compulsions. I'm going to go have an appointment. It just doesn't land the same. But the more we have conversations like we're having right now, it helps to break down that stigma, because it is absolutely normal to have different struggles. And the more that we can talk about it, the more people can get access to help, because they can go, oh, I'm not this freak that belongs in this category over here. I'm normal. I'm a person. I have a brain. It's braining. It brains in different ways. And so there's always resources available. So now that you're able to look back and you can see all the way back when you were 11, OCD popping up, I'm curious, when you were dating and when you were first getting married, have you been able to go, oh, in hindsight, like, I can see how OCD was kind of popping up and showing up, intruding upon our relationship? Or was it kind of not until closer to 2021 when things kind of bubbled over that you started to feel that more?
Yeah, I think it's closer to, like, when it was all bubbling up in, like, 2021. Because so before that, like, even when we got married like 10 years ago, it wasn't that much of a problem. Yeah. It's mainly just like the check-in issues and maybe like the even numbers, but nothing like serious. It just, like, was just part of my life. Yeah. It was something I dealt with. No one needs to know about it. It's just something was there. I do it and then it's just gone. It's fine. The anxiety would be there.
Yeah.
But after a while, it just sort of slowly goes.
Yeah. So you were interviewed by someone over at Yahoo Life, and I was reading through the article. It's an excellent article. So family, if you want to check that out, I'm going to link it over at this episode's blog over at OCDFamilyPodcast.com. So you can learn more about Danny's story. And Danny and I were talking even before we were recording. I think the author did a fantastic job of really portraying the struggle of OCD. But I know that in reading through that, you talk a little bit about when you became a dad. And with your oldest child, it sounds like there was a traumatic birth and there were also some further complications. And so if you're willing to share about that a bit more, I think it's something, and you highlight it even in the article, that men don't talk about very often in terms of going through the pain of a traumatic birth, but also how OCD kind of interwebbed itself there and intertangled itself with that trauma. And so to the extent that you're comfortable sharing about it, would you be willing to share with the fam about what that was like?
Yeah, it's a pretty scary time. So when Kim gave birth to our eldest son, Leo, she was taken to theater to give birth. And Leo was a very large child. He was like 10 pounds, 8.5. And the midwife told us that's the size of a 2-month-old, which then led to Kim just losing basically all her blood.
Oh my goodness.
Like, and there was a lot of people in the theater rushing around everywhere. There's a lot of going on. And then we got taken to a separate room, Leo in one side, Kim the other. She looked like death.
Right.
It was a real traumatic time and just had, like, I had no idea what was going on. And All the time people are asking, are you okay? Are you okay? And it felt to me like, why didn't someone ask me if I'm okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm here. Okay. Yeah. The physical damage isn't to me.
Right.
But, like, I'm seeing all this. I've never dealt with this before. I've never been a dad. I've never been in a theater before. Like, So it's a pretty, and I just don't think, even afterwards, everything was fine.
Yeah.
Like, luckily, she still has a few physical problems, but she's all right. Leo's fine. It's just a typical teenage boy. But no one at the hospital never said to me, is everything all right with you? And I don't think dads or men get asked enough, and men are hard. It's hard for men to say to another man, are you sure everything's okay?
Yeah. Well, and one of the things too, and you were kind of highlighting it earlier, even in the conversation you had in the car about mental health, but that feeling of like, I need to be strong and suck it up. And like, yeah, because compared to what she's going through.
Yeah, I feel awful. Like, she's literally nearly dead in fear. And like, it'd be so selfish for me to say, struggling a bit. Like, you need to be there for your wife and support her.
Yeah. But also, and again, Danny, not pushing against it. I'm just thinking out loud. So take from it what you will. But also, like, you've never seen your wife almost die. It is your first time being a father. You don't know if you're going to have to raise this boy on your own. Like, I can imagine, even if you're not physically the one going through it, it is your worst nightmare playing in front of you in real time. It's not at this point. This one's not an intrusive thought. This is live action fear. Like, you didn't know what was going to happen. So of course that would be traumatizing. That's so hard.
Yeah, I think that led to a lot of intrusive thoughts as well about having to protect him all the time. After seeing what's happened in that theater and in the room afterwards, that some of the intrusive thoughts are about, like, I need to look after these two people all the time. If I have to check everything 15 times, then I'm going to do it if it's going to look after them and no bad's going to come of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that is where we talk a lot. And I know this is the season premiere. You're my premier guest here, Danny. But over the catalog of episodes, we've talked about how tricky trauma can be and how opportunistic OCD can be. Because you can experience something traumatic like that. And then OCD says, yeah, and you know what? That could happen again. And it might be all your fault. And it could be worse if you don't, .. check again, do this. End on the even number, fill in the blank. It could be so many things. And so it's so frustrating how opportunistic OCD is, but it's so enlightening too, because then we start to go, oh, it's not that my loved ones are in constant threat and it is my job to fail it, right? But rather it's OCD and my brain taking this really traumatic event and intertwining it as if it's my responsibility and my problem to stop on the daily. And so I really appreciate you, A, sharing about and highlighting how that affected you as a man, as a husband, as a dad. I think there is also still quite a stigma. As much as things have changed, men are thought to be strong, and to be strong, you're not supposed to sit and have a breakdown. You're not supposed to be crying. You're not supposed to be all these different things. That's what masculinity is. And it's wrong. You can be all those things and still be very, very incredibly strong. I mean, getting through the trauma alone takes amazing strength. And so it's something that is important to talk about, but also highlighting that trauma piece is really important. And then something you share more about in the article, too, is then even moving forward from your son's birth to the degree that you are open talking about it. It sounds like you guys suffered a loss and that led to also your daughter being born and having some complications that were also very triggering. Is that right?
Yeah. So it was a few years after that, and I can't remember the exact date, she had a miscarriage, which was pretty hard. And same for Kim as well, but no one ever spoke to us at the hospital when it happened to say, here's support here if you need it. We were just not even a room. We just were sat on the side and said, you know, just go whenever you're ready. There was never any support there available. Look at it now. You can go online, the support there, but you're not led to it. You have to kind of find it yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty bad time, which I never spoke to anyone about. And when I have spoken to people about it, it's so common.
Yeah.
People say it happened to us, but like, it just never gets spoken about, especially with men. I think women might talk about it more, but a man never says to a man about it. And then, yeah, with my daughter, Neve, when she was 5 weeks old, she got viral meningitis.
Oh my goodness.
So that was, she was in hospital now for around a week, I think it was. And yeah, that was a pretty awful time because, again, didn't really know what was going on.
Right.
Like, just had no idea what was going on. You're in a children's ward with a lot of sick children.
Right.
And it just felt really awful.
And scary. Yeah, you don't know if she's going to survive. And she's so little and her immune system is so new.
Yeah, I can't explain to you, like, how awful you feel that you can't do nothing for them. And then, again, it's like an OCD thing later on, being protective by doing these check-in and the even number stuff, thinking that if I don't check this, she might get meningitis again and die next time. So I need to do that.
Yeah.
And it might sound crazy to some people, but it's just, like, you know, it's just OCD.
It is. It's OCD.
Yeah, it's attacks your loved ones.
Yeah. And it happens to be that as OCD sufferers and warriors, something that I feel privileged about in my work is people that struggle with OCD are some of the most creative, empathic, caring people around. And so it is a matter, yeah, it's not craziness at all. It's a matter of like, I care so much and I want to make sure this person's good, that this person's safe, that this person's okay. And so it's really driven out of your compassion. It's driven out of your caring for other people, your protective instinct and survival instinct. Because really what's going off in your brain is this alarm of, oh my gosh, danger, danger, danger. But at the same time, it was just a thought. And so we're responding to that false alarm going, danger, danger, danger. You might cause meningitis again. As if we had the power. Could you imagine?
Yeah, it's just mad. It's just, I say, it's so hard to explain to someone. If you said to someone, oh, I get these thoughts about, oh, my daughter might get meningitis again if I don't check my hub 10 times, or they check my door 15 minutes. They probably think like, you're a bit crazy. You need to get mental health. And you kind of do, I guess.
Well, and not that you're crazy, but yeah, if it were as easy to shut off on our own, we would just shut it off on our own, right?
Yeah.
And so that highlights where the support can be so helpful, because the process of challenging OCD, and again, it's what's happening in our neurocircuitry. So we're fighting our own brain on this, is definitely challenging. So you were Googling about it in 2021. And you looked out for help. Where did that take you? Where did you land in terms of resources with that?
So the National Health Service, I found this group, Wellbeing Suffolk. So I looked on their website and all the symptoms I had were there in front of me.
Yeah.
I was like, that is what I'm reading is me. Not all of it, but the majority of it. And there's a form on there to fill out. And within, it's pretty soon, maybe 2 days later, someone contacted me and just went through to double check what everything I told them, and that was the right person to speak to. And they linked me up with a therapist through the National Health Service, which is free.
Right.
It was about 4 weeks so I got to see him, but depending on what part of the country you are, it can take longer.
Yeah.
Which I just find a bit crazy. Like, it can take like 12 weeks to speak to a therapist through the National Health Service. If you had a broken leg, for example, mm-hmm. you go to the hospital and they see you straight away. But because it's mental health, you have to wait months and months and months. Yeah. So through Wellbeing Suffolk, they linked me up with this therapist who I'd done ERP with for, I think we was meant to have 12 sessions, but after, I think it was 8 sessions, he signed me off and said, you're doing good. You can just be okay now. And I was also seeing a CBT therapist at the time as well. Wasn't really mainly to do with OCD, but mainly just to talk about mental health. And just,
yep.
I spoke to her about things about like Leo's birth and Kim and me having meningitis and some other things that happened in my life, spoke to her about them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, even just that made me feel better.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I come home and Kim would say to me, I can tell you've had a good session just by how you are. Just to tell, and the therapist, like, some of the stuff you've told me, you've never told or spoken to anyone before. And like, no, never. Like, it's just,
yeah,
which is bad.
Yeah, so you had to be willing to be really vulnerable and honest with the process, because as a therapist too, I know like I need to build that trust and that relationship with the client often before they're going to spill it, unless they're like, oh no, no, like it's been my whole life. I got to, right? But you were willing to be very vulnerable with that process, which I love. And I think it helps, again, break down that stigma. There's no shame in telling your story and saying, gosh, these were the parts that were really hard. And these are still hard. And this is still bugging me and haunting me to this day. And so you were willing to do that. Now, you bring up a great point. NHS took a couple months to get in. If it was something that was triaged, it's never considered mental health. Right? Unless probably you're a danger to yourself or someone else. Like if you're suicidal, they should triage you right away. But you're right. If you have any kind of enduring issue, which is, again, all of us, because we all have brains, right? It takes a long time to be able to link to services. Now, research will usually say for ERP, which is exposure and response prevention, for any new family joining us, it's one of the evidence-based treatments for treating OCD. It can take anywhere from 14 to 16 sessions. Some of us therapists that have done ERP for a long time are like, we've had people with us for years. Sometimes it clicks really quickly. But you got the sign off in 8 weeks, Danny. 8 weeks. Yeah. They were like, you're good, man.
Yes.
Can you explain what ERP was like? Because it is different than, I'm sure, what you were experiencing with your other CBT therapist.
It was very, the first thing to say, it's very, very hard. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect it to be any different, but it was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. And when I had my first session booked, it was getting nearer the time. And I just thought I could just cancel this and just carry on living my life with this awful thing. But no, I stuck to it. And the first thing we done is we chatted. He got to learn about me. Mm-hmm. And then one of the first things we done was just, I went and stood outside my front door. And I literally just stood there. He said, stand there. Don't lock it. Don't check it. Just stand there for just a few seconds. And my first thoughts were like, God, if anyone sees me, what's this guy doing? Like, is he mad? Just standing behind his door.
Yeah.
And then it became like a process of just moving forever away from the door. Mm-hmm. But lock it. Just move away and don't check. And it is so hard. And again, it's hard to explain to someone who doesn't have OCD how hard it is to lock your door and just walk away from it just for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
The anxiety. Yes. It's like crazy.
All the anxiety that's been building and accumulating since you were 11. So
yeah.
It's not just like the anxiety of today. It's the such an embedded fear and such an embedded response that it would be like for somebody who doesn't suffer with OCD, it can feel like, let's go skydiving and we're going to jump out of the plane, but don't pull your parachute. That would be a compulsion. Yeah. That would be a compulsion, right? And they're like, so I'm going to die is what you're telling me. We're going to go die today. I would rather not, right? That is the level. That's the fever pitch that it can get to. And granted, in ERP, we try to not start people there at jumping out of the airplane without the parachute. We try to ease into it. But yeah, I mean, it is a challenge. So you didn't start like a mile away from that door, but you got a little more distance each time you tiptoed back and it was still incredibly difficult. Were there times where you were like, screw this shit, I give up, I don't, or how were you in that process?
Yeah, there was times that I was like that. There'd be times where I'd lock the door, wouldn't check it, and I'd walk around, it's like a field around the back of my house. And I'd be on the phone with Martin, my therapist. He'd be asking me how I'm feeling. Like, I feel actually really terrible. Mm-hmm. He's like, but just tell me your anxiety levels. And it might be like 80%. He's like, just carry on walking, keep going. How is it now? Slowly, although that door's in my mind, the anxiety levels are slowly coming down. Like never ever did it get to like 0%.
Mm-hmm.
But it did get easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that is part of, for anybody kind of new to hearing about ERP, that's kind of the magic in ERP is that as we do the response prevention, so again, it's exposure and response prevention. We expose ourselves to the trigger that's really that core fear within the intrusive thought. And then we prevent the response prevention, right? We prevent the compulsion. And again, if we could just knock it off on our own, we would. And it wouldn't be OCD. It would just be a Tuesday, right? But it's not that. It's the, again, it's attached to all this meaning and the consequence and distress. And so the process is difficult. It's absolutely difficult. And it's not only a change for you, but it's a change for the family. And so as a part of your ERP therapy, was there any guidance or guidelines given to your wife or anybody else in the family in terms of like, if I'm really worried and I text Kim, Kim, tell me that everything's safe over there. Kim, don't respond or anything like that. Or what was that process like for your family coming alongside you in treatment?
Not really. No, I never really spoke about it with her too much. Like there was only one time when one of my things I had to do was with the shoe rack, tip all the shoes off the shoe rack. And mm-hmm. just leave them. Don't organize them. Just sit with them. I had all these shoes around me. And she obviously heard it. She come through. She's like, what is going on? I'm like, I've got to see here amongst all these shoes and looked up to them. She's like, okay. So she knew what was kind of happening. And there's another time with all the knives and forks. I emptied them all out on the side. And she like comes through and she's like, what is going on with my cutlery? I was like, just leave it. I can't touch it for a little while. But then it's like the anxiety, like, you know,
yeah.
I tried to get all the knives and forks. She's put them all back, organize it all nicely because I'm getting these thoughts like,
yeah.
You know, some bad things are going to happen. So she kind of knows like what was going on, but I didn't really speak to her too much about it. She just left me to it to deal with.
I see. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because again, those of us that are sufferers or have listened to the podcast for a while, you're probably getting the, that reminds me of like harm OCD themes, right? I might lock up all the knives, scissors, any kind of sharp object. If I'm afraid of harm from someone or even myself, possibly coming to people that I love the most. And so, yeah, that's an example of what an ERP exposure could be. And it is difficult. It is really tricky. And like you're saying, you never really felt, at least with the checking for the door, You never quite felt it go to zero, but you felt it improve significantly. And so after 8 weeks, were you like, okay, I have these new tools, I'm going to continue using them? Or to what degree do you still use ERP tools today?
Just all the time, basically.
Yeah.
Like I could go out now and I might get some horrible thoughts and I lock the door and I check it, but I kind of know my head through ERP. I know it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Like, I know it sounds simple, so it's going to be fine, but it is hard. But the further you get away, it's hard. I learned a grounding technique as well.
Yeah.
You heard it before, like the 5 things you can see, 4 things you can touch, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I try and do that, but I can do that by myself with no one even knowing. Apart from the taste, I look a bit weird if I just went and taste something. Tell me, like, what are you doing? But yeah, the 5 things you can see and touch and hear and stuff, I can do that without anyone even knowing that I'm doing it.
See, I like to taste things. So now I'm like, oh, I could just say I'm doing a grounding technique. They're like, why are you doing that? I'm like, mental health matters. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. When I first did learn about the grounding techniques, I did think, if anyone's watching me around here and I'm on the phone to my Ferris, it's they're gonna be like, this guy's crazy just walking around smelling things and tasting things.
Yeah. Yeah, and you notice that theme of, gosh, if other people were watching this, whether it was the ERP exercise around the door, or whether it's a grounding technique. And again, I think it just speaks to the stigma and the shame around, like, gosh, if I'm doing something to help myself, are people going to think something of me?
Yeah, so my thought as well was like, if someone sees me do this, they think, like, this guy's a bit crazy. But if you had a broken leg and a doctor said to you, oh, well, you go on the field and do some exercises, no one would think twice about it because you're just like helping your leg get better. That's what people can see.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Do you remember, gosh, it was probably, I think it was kind of probably early 2000s when Bluetooth, like hand-free Bluetooth phone, like receptors came in and they were big. Yeah. They were kind of honking. Yeah. And honking, that's a technical term. I'm letting my Midwest show, anybody from your local area is going to be like, what? But they were meaty, they were beefy. And I remember you would see somebody going, they glow really brightly blue. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
and people would be talking to themselves. But you weren't accustomed, if somebody was walking by themselves, that they'd just be chatting it up and having a conversation. And so it used to seem really bizarre. Now people are like out there with the selfie stick. Everyone's live streaming crap. Like, it's, if you're talking to yourself, nobody blinks an eye at it, right? But it just shows a little bit, a case in point, the magic of exposure. The more we get used to something, the less bizarre it feels, the less stigmatizing it is. Now we're just like, oh, yeah, well, I mean, clearly they're on the phone, right? And so it's funny, but you remember those. Those were like, you'd spot people around town or they'd be in the grocery store, have a conversation, and you're like, what?
I do remember that.
Yeah, it's funny. That's funny how the trends change over time, especially in cell phone technology. But I like that you find yourself continuing to use it. You may have had 8 ERP sessions, but you said this is a lifestyle because, like you said, your brain doesn't just quit being your brain. It doesn't just shut off. So what does it mean to have treatment? What does it mean to recover? What does it mean to go live your life? Well, it means you have to work your steps. So if an intrusive thought pops in, you know how to handle it. And I'm going to guess for all of us that an intrusive thought, sometimes you can spot it really quickly. Sometimes you can get real sucked into it and then you're like, oh, shit, I was definitely in a compulsive wheel about this. Let me kind of zoom out and do my work my steps here. But how has it felt for you now in terms of where you were in 2021 and where you are now? What percentage of life feels different for you?
A very big amount, I guess. It's really hard to explain. Because you still have to get on with life. You got children, right? I've got to take him out somewhere. It's intrusive thoughts when I go to leave the house. I just have to get on with it.
Yeah.
That's what's hardest. So whether I've had the therapy or not, like, they're still there. I don't know. It's just really hard to explain that.
Well, I think you actually explained it beautifully because there is this piece, and I'm not sure when you went through ERP, if your therapist talked about this, but it's talked a lot about in the ERP community about embracing uncertainty. And it's a little bit of what you're describing, like, okay, life's going to happen, though, and got to get out and live it. And so whether the thought comes or not, whether it feels dire or not, whether it really, like, brings my anxiety up or not, I got to embrace living life and move through it.
I guess what one thing I would say, I'm guessing now I'm probably a better dad and husband now, because I guess like, say like back 2021, we'd go out and I'd check on all the stuff and they're like, come on out the house. But I'm thinking, I'll get in these forts here if I don't check around. So I'm going to be, I was really anxious and we go, I guess I was like, not grumpy, but irritated, because I'm really, my anxiety levels are like through the roof.
Yeah.
And we just want to go out. But now that they obviously kind of understand as well.
Yeah.
I can relax more because they know.
Right.
And my wife can understand why if I wasn't anxious or whatever.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because just thinking out loud, this thought just popped up for me. But just like when your wife was going through everything with the traumatic birth and miscarriage and through, I'm sure, with your daughter's meningitis and all of that. And you feel like, who am I to complain about how hard this is? Because I'm not the one directly going through it, but it was hard and the support and resources were needed. I wonder for her, or sometimes for kiddos, depending on age, et cetera. And more than just wonder, because I would say part of my heart in creating this community is that for them too, seeing their loved one battle through this intense thing, you know, again, like they're not the one living it, so that they may not want to complain, but their understanding of how OCD is functioning, their understanding or even having some support and resources of, hey, how is this affecting you, can be really helpful too.
Yeah.
But what I will say, if you're okay with me including this, is that Kim, if you're listening, which I'm sure you will, because you'll be like, Danny, that's my man. I got to listen to my gut, right? But if you're listening, it's okay if you sometimes are like, I'm not sure how to handle this, or if I'm having a hard time with it too. And it's okay to reach out for resources or even hang with us here at the OCD Family Community, because this is what we talk about nonstop, is how to better understand and support our loved ones with OCD. So if you're cool with me including that bit, Danny, I would love to invite her to the community as well, because I think just as it would have been so helpful, oh gosh, I'm thinking about the miscarriage, the statistic, and it may have even gone up from what I last recall, but it was something like 1 in 4 people experience a miscarriage. And so you think, how is something that happens to 25% of people, you're sitting there in a side room, no resources, being like, okay, well, when, you know, things clear up and you get dressed, you can go, or whatever the situation is. It's like, gosh, we need more support and resources for a myriad of things. And so that's really, yeah, just my little pitch in the family. Having some of those supports can help them not only understand OCD better, but know when they're agging it on. Sometimes we're feeding the monster and we don't even realize it, right? Oh, no, you locked it. I saw you lock it. And you're like, oh, well, that makes me feel temporarily better, because that's about as good as doing the compulsion myself that I could check, and things of that sort. And so it can be helpful for the family member to have some resources too. Just saying.
I think Kim knows that when she's like read up a little bit about OCD, there's quite a few like good Instagram accounts. She's like seen stuff, and I've shared stuff with her. So she knows.
Yeah.
Well, she does know a lot about it.
Yeah.
Probably more than I do.
She's like researching, yeah.
Yeah, she's more intelligent than me, so she understands it even more than I do.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Find our better half, right? And we're like leaning into that. I love that. And so leading to today, what do you think has been one of the best takeaways for you toward living a full life? You've talked about like, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I got to live life anyway. But has it shifted from you from surviving these different threats to like, having these future goals and things that you want for yourself that don't have to feel dictated by OCD? What do you think?
Yeah, there's times when, at my worst, when I wouldn't do things, I'd put things off just to see simple things like people inviting you out to go for a drink or something.
Uh-huh.
And I would always say, yeah, I'll do that. But then the closer it got, I just cancel because, and there is still times I do it. And there was recently, it's my friend's birthday, a little while back, and I was struggling a little bit of OCD. So I didn't go, and I still feel guilty about it now. But yeah, you just have to kind of be brave, just do things. Just
yeah,
because of the therapy I've had, it's taught me ways to get out.
Yeah.
So for example, if I knew I had to go out, I'd think, oh, great, I've got to check all the doors, check all the windows, check the gas, check all the ovens on an even number just to go out. I think I can't be bothered with that. So I'm just going to cancel my plans.
Yeah.
So, but now I know how to deal with it. And if I'm going out, I just think, I don't care, just go.
Yeah. And if you decide you want to cancel plans, that's one thing. But if you're canceling plans because OCD is like, this bad thing could happen, then it feels, you know, like you don't get to call the shots in your own life. OCD is the bossy one there. So I love that you're like, you know what? I'm trying to just do the things I want to do and not feeling limited by OCD. I love that.
Yeah. And she would as well, like back then as well, she'd say, oh, I thought you was going out. And I'd just make an excuse. Oh, just a bit tired, can't be bothered or whatever.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, fine. Like, whereas now she's sort of like, I know you've got something wrong. Like, just go. Just don't let it beat you. Go.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that support and that encouragement.
Yeah.
That's right. Do you usually feel better once you're out? Do you find, like, even if that anxiety spikes, that similar to kind of the door exercise, like, in time, it comes back?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. Like, originally, when you first go out, it's like the anxiety could be quite high. Once you're out, it's fine. Like, just, and I always think if anything's going to happen, it's not in my control. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
I'm out now, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, how that mountain of fear turns into a little hill of fear on the other side. It feels so big going into it. But then on the other side, you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah. But so it's been like you could be out and sometimes it just hits you randomly.
Yes.
And you just have to deal with things like, it's fine, just relax. So it's easier said than done a lot of the times, but
yeah,
it's pretty difficult.
Yeah, it's tricky. If you could give people one kind of note on what you wish they understood better about OCD, what do you think that would be?
That is a serious mental health condition, which a lot of people suffer with, and that people don't just use OCD as three random letters because they like to be tidy in their house or something, like, because that is pretty frustrating. I was recently on a first aid course and there were some numbers on a chart for something.
Yeah.
This bloke, they asked this man about it. He said, oh, that really sets off my OCD. And I said, well, dear, like, grab him and say, what do you mean? Do you even understand, like, what you just said? Because I don't think people understand. You said to someone, do you know what OCD is, what you've just said? They wouldn't be able to tell you.
Right.
But they just use that word. They just use them three letters and they don't know what it means.
Right. Or they compare it to being a little more like anal retentive or really kind of detail oriented. And you're like, well, I'm detail oriented to the threats that that my mind is like gaslighting me on. And wouldn't anybody, if you thought like, we have to defuse this bomb or else, because it feels like that. It can feel like that constantly. And that's exhausting. So I think that's such a great point. Well, in the last couple weeks, I had my 100th episode giveaway. You happen to be one of the winners. And you're going to be able to learn about ICBT, that's inference-based CBT. And I'll be really curious, Danny, if you check it out, how you like it, because it is very different than ERP. And like you said, ERP has brought you a good chunk of the way, but you've never been to zero. And I think that it'll be interesting to see if it brings you down anymore from where you feel like you've been, which is super manageable, much better than what it was. But I'll just be interested if you try it out and you're like, I like it. Or if you try it out and you're like, I don't like it. I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yes, I'm willing to try anything just if it makes life easier dealing with those OCD, then yeah, I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah, I love that. Because, you know, it is something, as I've learned about it too, even something like the grounding exercise, something that's helpful for me is, from an ICBT standpoint, I start to understand that when I am spiraling about something in OCD, I'm in my imagination. I'm in the catastrophe of how many ways this could go wrong. But I literally can't be absorbed into that story and completely engaged in what's happening right here, right now, because my headspace, it's kind of like, you know, trying to think about a story about oranges and picking out an orange at the grocer. And also sit there and stare at my headphones. Like, I can't run both of them at the same time because my mind is competing too much, right? And so it's a very fascinating treatment protocol. And I will say, like, similar to you, ERP brought me a big part of the way and has brought a lot of my clients a big part of the way. But ICBT has been a wonderful option as well that helps me understand, like, how did we even get to these thoughts? Is there a rhyme or reason that these thoughts and not other thoughts stick for us? And ICBT says yes. So if you check it out and you're like, gosh, that's interesting, I would love to have you come back and share about it, because I would love to kind of pick your brain on some of the differences that you find. But I so appreciate you coming on today. Is there anything else that you want to share about things going on, any resources in your area maybe that you have found helpful that you would point other sufferers to?
So I've used support groups on a charity called OCD Action. They have support groups on there where people just talk about their OCD and have people offer advice and just talk about what's going on with them. That was pretty, very good website they've got as well to check out.
Yeah.
OCD UK is pretty similar. That's another good place to go. That's both of them websites I used before I got diagnosed with OCD, and I thought I did have OCD. I went on there and it was real good to read some of the stuff, just to read stories mainly about stuff that was going on with me. I could see it and down by people, their lived experience.
Yeah.
And that's when it opened my eyes to be like, yeah, I definitely need to speak to someone. So yeah. I get diagnosed and there's help there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just validating that you're not the only one that's ever dealt with these kind of intrusive thoughts. Because before you say it to anybody, before you see that, you're like, it's me and I'm the monster. I don't know. Like, yeah. Something's wrong with me. Right. But then you go, oh, no, other people dealt with these. And you can tell just from hearing someone's story, you're like, oh, you know what it's like.
Yeah. Just like so many people suffer inside. It's not just with OCD, it's mental health.
Yeah.
And there's so much help out there. People don't know. I don't really understand why. I guess you have to look for it, but there's so much help out there.
Yeah.
And it's scary and it's hard and it's pretty shameful, but there's always help there for someone.
Yeah. Well, I love that, Danny. And this podcast, I guarantee you sharing your story, people are going to hear that and relate to. And so you're being part of that hope and bringing part of that hope for people going, oh my gosh, I am suffering in silence. I have been too scared to say this and I'm scared to say it out loud. We get it. It's scary. It is hard work. Living with OCD is hard work. And so there's hope available. And I just super appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. Thank you, Kim, for everything you've done, being a rock star, supporting your man here. And I wish you the best, Danny. Thanks so much for coming on.
No worries. Nice to be on.
Thank you for that. Alrighty. What a great conversation. Another big thanks to Danny for his time, his willingness to bravely tell his story, and for him showing his work on what resources he found most helpful along the way. Again, all of those will be linked over on this episode's blog at OCDFamilyPodcast.com. And that brings us to our intrusive thoughts segment, which for the new family is my application segment of the show. It's that time where we try to draw upon something we learned from Danny's amazing story and see how we can use that tool or principle today. And one of the really impactful notes Danny shared was the power of opening up to his loved ones, telling his wife, deciding today's the day, I'm not going to shrug off the, yeah, good thing we don't have struggles type comment and say, actually, here's where I'm at. Because for Danny, it was a real turning point in his journey with OCD. And it allowed him to know not only can he go out and get support, but he doesn't have to face that burden alone. So how do we do that? Well, whether we're talking about OCD, our own struggles, or figuring out how to best love and support on our warriors, we can practice choosing one thing, no matter how big or small, it is your call, and practice bringing it to the awareness of a safe confidant in our lives. So whether it's your mother or your brother or partner or spouse, it's sharing, gosh, this thing over here, this is hard for me. And I emphasize a safe confidant because I recognize that we're different people. We all have different intersections. And thusly, we may have different privileges or challenges in feeling like we can really live that honestly with another person. So if that's you and you're like, I am afraid about being ostracized, pushed out, targeted for sharing my struggle, then I'm going to encourage you to look into finding your own therapist if you don't have one, or a support community, whether it's an online support community, an advocacy coalition. I mean, hey, for some people, it might even be their barber. All the stories barbers could tell, but they don't. And that's why we like talking to them. So find your person, your trusted person, and tell them, this thing here, I'm struggling with this. Because guess what, fam? As little of a step as that might seem, this advocacy, this change, this movement and momentum, it starts with us. It starts with families being able to have these tough conversations. For Danny, it started with him going, oh my gosh, this is what's going on. And his wife was like, babe, I got you. Let's get you the help you need. So let's bravely follow Danny's footsteps. I mean, if he can do it on a podcast, can we do it in our own living rooms, driveways, with our ride or dies, Our besties, our fam, yeah, we can. And though it may be scary and hard, and though shame has its way of clouding and casting judgment our way, we are not our thoughts. And our struggles, they don't define us. And we are better together. Thank you for joining me and our OCD family community. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please like and subscribe to the OCD Family Podcast wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Did you find this content helpful? Please consider leaving a review. The more people that know they're not alone, the better. For more information regarding today's podcast, please visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com and remember to join the email list while you're there. It will provide you with the most up-to-date information, resources, and the demo on the family chatter. Oh yeah, nothing says family like Danny and me chatting it up about OCD. That's right, I went there. And you can too at OCDFamilyPodcast.com. Therapists, are your clients struggling with disgust-based contamination OCD? Have you tried upgrading your ERP with the Mastery approach? Visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses and click on my link because I've got just the training for you. At OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses, you can check out OCD Training School's entire catalog of courses, including Rich Gallagher's course, Treating Contamination OCD. Where else can you build mastery over disgust-based triggers while supporting the fam at no extra cost to you? It's a win-win at OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses.